Unity Bowie, how are you? Unity Center of Light. Good morning. How are y'all?
Who's out there?
It's awesome. How many of you have heard me speak before? Y'all came back a little more torture. That says about you. All right. So no, it's really awesome to be here. I think this is my fourth or fifth time to be here at Unity Center of Light. So April, thank you always for the invitation to come back and serve your congregation. It is a blessing to be here with each and every one of you. So just look around, right? Just look around with the blessings that we have. The sunshine. What is it? It's like 70 degrees in January. I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, but we'll take it. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day for God. It's a beautiful day to be in community, to be in fellowship, to be with your spiritual family. This is, in fact, a very central spiritual practice, isn't it? How many of you feel like this is part of your spiritual practice? Awesome. You know, I travel a lot. I speak around the country at Unity churches. I lead retreats. I do some corporate training and professional development training. So I'm like out. I don't honestly know much. Except I know a lot about human beings. In fact, I know very little except for human beings, but I know a lot about human beings because that's all that I really do and work on and think about. And because I'm with human beings a lot and often in a spiritual capacity, people ask me often, Jackie, you know, what are your spiritual practices? And I love that question because it tells me that people see something in me that they want to replicate. They see a connection with spirit or something. I don't know, probably just because I'm funny and sexy. But there's something that people want to learn from having been around me. So they ask, what's your spiritual practice? And while I appreciate the question, I also take pause with the question. Because isn't everything your spiritual practice? I mean, really, if we're a spiritual being having a human experience, then all we're really doing is spiritual practice. Imagine, you know, if you bumped into a friend at the grocery store and they're like, hey, what are you up to? And you say, oh, I'm doing my grocery shopping practice. Or you see somebody at the gym that you've seen many, many times and they're like, hey, you know, how you doing? I'm like, oh, great, great, I'm doing my fitness practice. That notion that we have our spiritual practice that's this thing that we do, apart from who we are and how we live our lives, I think is a little bit of a misconception. And from that, I like to think about this notion of make your life your living prayer. Make your life your spiritual practice. Because to me, spiritual practice isn't necessarily something that you do. It's who you are, no matter what you're doing. In 1 Thessalonians, it says, pray without ceasing. I have to say, that was the verse that gave rise to this whole notion to me of living, you know, making your life your spiritual practice, make your life a living prayer. Because if you're praying without, how do you pray without ceasing when you're driving to work, when you're engaging with your colleagues or making dinner? How do you pray without ceasing if you're not making your life itself an act of devotion to God? Now, some of you are like really inspired by this. Some of you are a little challenged, right? I get that, because we don't necessarily think about how we're living the entirety of our lives as being our spiritual practice. But I do, and I actually really love it. It drives my son crazy. I have a 14-year-old son. Of course, no matter what I do, I embarrass him. And so one of my spiritual practices, if you will, is to see the divinity, see the Christ in everyone, no matter where I am, where I go. I have to remind myself, including my 14-year-old son. Thank you very much, God, for putting that in my head right now. Right? But so, you know, so what I do is whenever I'm out, you know, my son loves to go to Chipotle, so I'm at Chipotle probably 3 or 4 times a week. And, you know, it's like young people who are usually kind of hip and tattooed and pierced and whatnot who are serving. And that's, you know, that's all good. So I make a point of noticing something about all of the people that you go down the service line, right? Usually 2 or 3 people that serve you as you go. I just make a point of, like, finding something about each and every one of them that I call out and acknowledge. Like, oh my gosh, that is, like, such a beautiful tattoo. Where'd you get that? And my son's like, Mom, knock it off. I'm like, no, look, he smiled. He liked that. I like made his day. Make your life a living prayer. Are you seeing the divinity in people everywhere you go? Are you seeing the Christ essence in everyone?
my minister, the Reverend Shipley Allinson, back at Unity on the River in Massachusetts, where it was my home church before I moved here to this area. And I just love, this is my favorite quote, you guys can steal it from me, from her. And she says, "I behold the Christ in you, because often I can't stand the rest of you." Write that down. Tweet it out, right? I mean, I can't tell you, that helps me, like restores me in my spiritual practice. I behold the Christ in you, because sometimes I can't stand the rest of you. But even that person, even that moment, can you see the Christ essence in that person? Can you see the Christ essence in yourself? So in order to make your life a living prayer, and we have to get into this a little bit, right? So this is what we're going to study all day today, both my talk and the workshop. Okay, Michelle, don't lose your glasses. You all good, honey? It's me. It's, you know, my ADD. So it's like something fell over there. What is that? Do I need to go pick it up? All right, I'm back. Good. So in order to make your life a living prayer, you have to grapple with this truth, that you are always being lived by something. It's an interesting notion, isn't it? You're always being lived by something. So when you've given up, you're being lived by resignation. When you're challenged by something and you say, no, I'll get to that later, you're being lived by fear. When you're angry and arguing, you're being lived by your ego's need to be right or get its own way. When you, I know, right? You're like, I liked you until now. I get it. We'll get through this. When you are, in any form of annoyance or frustration, you are being lived by lack of surrender, lack of acceptance. When you are saying your prayers and affirmations, you're being lived by your faith. So you're always being lived by something. Neil Donald Walsh, wonderful author, prolific author, actually, I've read almost everything he's written. In one of his books, I can't tell you which one, he wrote, "Life proceeds from your intention for it." The problem is that too often we're going about life with no intention. Right? Make your life a living prayer. You're always being lived by something. So our job is to determine, what is it that I'm going to be lived by? Things that make you go, So let's make this practical. I want to put this notion, this concept into a story, an experience that I've had in my life with a dear, dear friend of mine. So my friend Jay, he's just a sweet, sweet man from Lincoln, Massachusetts. He's some kind of an attorney in Boston. Love the guy. 60-ish years old. And we've been friends for probably 15 years. And he had the incredibly good fortune of marrying his childhood sweetheart. Probably about 30 years ago. They were together since sixth grade, all through elementary school and middle school, high school, stayed together all through college, got married right after college, and just beautiful, beautiful life together. Friends with both of them. I've lived with them off and on at different times because they took Patty, his wife, they took her mom's split-level house and turned it into this palatial mansion with not one but two in-law apartments in it. So yes, I spend a fair amount of time with them. Anyway, dear, dear friends of mine, and in early on January-ish of 2018, Patty was diagnosed with tongue and throat cancer. And Jay, being the doting husband that he was, just loved up on Patty all the time, basically took off most of the year from his job, spent an enormous amount of time with her, and in November, Patty passed. So he lost his best friend, his lifelong partner, childhood sweetheart, the only, as he said to me over and over, the only woman I ever loved. And if anyone had any permission to just be lived by anger, regret, resignation, screw it, whatever like the appropriate word for screw it is, I'm sure there's one. But just like that whole sense of like, not doing that. But Jay's not that kind of a man. His vibe is really, really high. It's a very, very loving vibe. And before Patty passed, they had a heart-to-heart where Patty said, "Jay, look, you are so given by love in life that I want to be sure you know that I want you to marry again." And then she followed that up with, "And you'd better be picky because I'm a hard act to follow and you're a really good find." So I don't know how many months it was after Patty passed, but at some point, Jay started messing around with this online stuff, right? Kind of put up a profile here, put up a profile there. And he called me one day lamenting, really upset, that these algorithms are so bad on these websites because the gal he got matched with today was from Utah, and he has a 20-mile radius to Lincoln, Massachusetts. How did he get matched with her? And he was indignant and being lived by frustration in the moment. And, well, I didn't hear from him for about 10 days, so I followed. Hey, dude, what's going on? Like, what's happening? I'm glad that you're doing this dating thing. He's like, oh, my God, I'm going to Salt Lake City this weekend. Dude, what? So, sure enough, after 10 days of online dating, he went to Salt Lake City, and then 2 weeks later, his gal came here, and that weekend, they got engaged to be married.
Wow.
And in June of 2020, I am speaking at their wedding.
Wow.
You are always being lived by something. So let's press rewind on that story, right? So Patty gets sick, Jay goes into some kind of anger space and resignation, and then she passes, and he just kind of shuts down. How many of you know people who've done that, right? And no judgment, right? No judgment. People go through whatever they go through in their grief experience, but you're always being lived by something. And before Patty passed, Jay knew, I got to be lived by love. I can't imagine, he said this to me, you know, we were sitting with Patty in the last few days that she was alive, and he said to me, Jackie, I can't imagine never having the love of a woman again, the touch of a woman, and the beauty of just being around a woman. And given that my spouse is here, I was like, yeah, dude, I get that. Thank you for coming, honey. So that notion of, like, even in the, you know, really the darkest black, you know, dark night of the soul hour, what are you going to be lived by? So I follow a teacher, Dr. David Hawkins from Sedona, Arizona. He passed about 6 years ago. But he said something profound in his book called Transcending the Levels of Consciousness, wonderful book on consciousness. He's an amazing teacher on consciousness. Anyway, what he said in his book is, now it just went out of my head because I talked too long about who he was. All right, wait, it's going to come to me. Talk amongst yourselves. Oh, yeah, okay, good. I'm back. So what what he said to me was, not to me, although I did study with him. He said, if you want in your lifetime to reach enlightenment, do this. Take just one spiritual principle and apply it everywhere in your life, all the time, everywhere, to every circumstance, every person, every situation, including yourself. If you want to reach enlightenment, take just one principle and apply it everywhere, all the time, including yourself. And that's, again, this is one of the things that gave rise to my theory and my thinking about make your life a living prayer. Take one principle. You know, some of us are like that, you know, kind of serial studiers. You know, we kind of get into this, and then we're into that, and then into this. And that's great, because I know I'm curious, too. There's so much exciting stuff out there. But how deep is your spiritual practice going? So take just one principle. So for today, because I opened with Jay's story, I want us to look at the principle of love. What if you just take the notion of love and have that be your spiritual practice? What's your spiritual practice, Michelle? Oh, it's just love, Jackie. Yeah, it's just love. Like, wouldn't that give pause, right? She says you'd be like, what does that mean? Right? So partially because our language is woefully inadequate to help us really capture and experientially understand what love is and what that means. Do you know that, right? I mean, we in a given day, it'd be like, wow, you know, I love Sundays. I love Sunday afternoon football. I love playing basketball on Sundays. I love my spouse. I love my kid. I love my grandmother. I love my job. I love my work. I love peanut butter and jelly. What the heck? How do we then develop an understanding, a mature understanding of what love actually is? Do you know in the Sanskrit language, they have 96 words for love? True story, 96 words for love. Even in sign language, we have at least four different expressions for love in sign language. There's, of course, just I love you, like that, right? You all know that one, right? I love you. And then, you know, if you're using it in a sentence, right, there's this putting your hands across your chest to signify love, the heart center, the heart chakra. And then if you're talking about a person or a place or an activity or a thing, it's this. Mwah. It's called kiss fist. I love that. Mwah. Kiss fist, right? And then if it's a term of endearment, you know, just kind of on the chin. So even in sign languages, all these variations for how we mean love, but in our spoken English, it's just, yeah, I love that. So then, you know, maybe you look to Scripture. So you go 1 John 4, chapter 4, verse 8 says God is love. Well, that's really helpful, because if there's anything else that we're as confused about as love, it's God. Right? All the different faith traditions, all the different teachings about what God is. Can you say the name of God? Can you write God? What is God? What is love? How do you make your life a living prayer around love if you can't even start to articulate it? So that's what I want us to dive in and think about more deeply today. So just so we're on the same page, let's start with some definitions. So, mine, because I'm the one up here. We can take turns if you want. It'd be an interesting study, wouldn't it? What's your definition of God? So my definition of God is the animating life force energy of the universe. It's the animating energy that gives and sustains life. It is life itself. God, there is no spot where God is not. Because there's animating energy in everything. If we cut this apart, we would find at the very smallest level, we would find animating energy. Molecules in motion, things moving, the animating energy of life. That is God in you, in me. And we get very confused about that. So if God is an animating energy, then what is love? So I have a definition of love as well, of course, because I'm a speaker and you have to make this stuff up as you go. So this is what I've made up about the definition of love. It's in my new book. I'm writing a new book, so Money Vibe is out there. My new book is called Love Vibe, somewhat giving rise to my talk today because I'm thinking and reading a lot about love right now. So hopefully if I come back next year at this time, I'll be bringing that book with me. Anyway, so my definition of love, I use the 5C formula. It's the consciousness of care, compassion, commitment, and curiosity. And curiosity, right? So the 5 C's, the consciousness of care, commitment, compassion, and curiosity. So we have to start understanding that if you only relate to love as a noun or as an emotion, you will never make your life a living prayer through love. Because that's actually it's through being loving that you experience love. It's not the other way around. We think it is because of hormones and Hallmark. Right? We think something happens and then we feel love. That is not the case. We generate love in our lives. Hate your job? Great. Guess what your homework assignment is this week? Generate love. Can't stand that coworker? Keeps gossiping, picking up at your desk? Great. Your work this week? Generate love. Love is about being caring. Caring about other people. Love is about having a commitment to love. Because, look, guys, I don't know about you. It's not easy to be loving all the time. Sometimes I'd rather bitch and complain, quite honestly. Which is great, it's just not being loving. So what are you being lived by? If you dedicate yourself, as you dedicate yourself to being lived by just one spiritual principle, maybe start with an easier one, let's start with kindness or something, but if you dedicate yourself to being lived by love, this is what you have to commit to: care, compassion, commitment. Living in the consciousness of love. So consciousness is also an energy. So God is energy, love is energy. Living in that energy in how you devote your life. I was reading a blog post this week preparing for this talk, and I found this unbelievable story, I just loved it, about elementary school math teacher. And she was from Colorado and lived through the Columbine experience and then has seen this rise of school shootings and just really was quite bothered by it. So one of the things she started doing in her classroom was every Friday afternoon, she would have the kids in her class, the fifth grade class, write down who they wanted to sit next to next week. And after they went home, she would put all the papers in front of her, and because she's a mathematician, she said, everything runs in patterns. I just have to see the patterns of what children are being left out and marginalized. Because one of the things that gives rise to school shootings is students who feel disenfranchised. Students who feel like they don't belong. So she studied those patterns, and every week she would pay special attention to the kid who last week was most popular and this week nobody wants to sit with. She'd pay attention to the kid that just never gets mentioned. And then she would have them choose who is the stellar citizen of the week, who is the stellar classroom citizen of the week. So what kid week after week after week never gets mentioned? And then she would post her attention on them. She would have them be the star of that. Like, oh man, that's awesome. That was such a good idea. And when the teacher lauds her attention, her praise, what do the children do? They follow suit. Make your life a living prayer. She's a math teacher who's taking it upon herself to be loving, to do what she can in her corner of the world to maybe interrupt gun violence in one small classroom, 20, 30 kids, paying attention to what the research says, taking that research, putting it in her own consciousness, letting God work through her as the animating life force energy of creativity, bringing that forth into her life. With me? So the question for you is, where are you being planted in your life that you're just going through the motions? That you're just getting by, that your life is more of a, you know, a struggle, or, oh, they just want too much from me. Notice those five C's, not one of them was codependent. Not one of them was codependent. Because when you are doing loving things, you're not doing loving things for or in order to. Yes, being a loving person does meet your needs. It's amazing, actually. Look, I'm only loving about 50% of the time. Don't follow me around and check. But the 50% of the time that I am really being a loving person, it's amazing how easily your life turns out. It's amazing to me. I have a friend who's in real estate in Massachusetts, and he constantly complains to me about how horrible service people are. And contractors and subcontractors, and you can't get help and all this. Well, we were doing a renovation on our house back in Massachusetts one night, and I was using one of those pneumatic hammer things, and it didn't seem to be driving the nail in. I'm like, I don't know, is it me? Like, am I not hitting it hard enough? What's the issue? And so I called Home Depot, because we'd rented the pneumatic hammer from Home Depot, and the service guy says, hey, my shift's over in 10 minutes. Why don't I just throw one in my truck, stop over, and I'll see if it's the machine or if it needs to be replaced. And I was like, dude, he ended up staying with us till like midnight, driving, you know, nails into my new hardwood floor in the bedroom and helping me out. Make your life a living prayer. Because we know that everything is energy. So when you put out into the world that loving energy of like, you know, life is working for me because people all around are just here to be loved on and to be loving toward me. Do you believe that? Do you believe we're living in a loving, hospitable place? I mean, look, let's tell the truth. If you watch the news, it's a little hard to go there. But which truth are you going to believe? The truth of outer experience, outer occurrences and appearances, or the truth of our God self within? I know there's a lot of really crappy things going on in the world right now, which behooves us to raise our consciousness even more, to leave here being more loving, being more committed, being more compassionate. Yes, even to that neighbor who's got that sign in their front yard that you don't agree with. Right? To bring that energy everywhere you go, even when it's not easy. You with me? But here's the thing. Got to go one step deeper, then I'll close. You can't make your life a living prayer, being lived by love, until you what? Love yourself. Who said that? Who said that? Who said that? Is that you, dude? All right, you pick up a Money Vibe book on your way out. Until you love yourself. Now, talk about confusing notions. Talk about confusing notions. Like, we're all confused about what God is. We're all confused about what love is. And then, oh, yes, there's this whole notion of self-love. You look at the magazine, and you're like, oh, self-love must mean I get myself one of those hot stone massages given by a really svelte and pretty woman in a beautiful environment that has palm trees in the background with a waterfall. Right? Oh, that must be what self-love is. Or maybe it's, oh, wow, look at that dessert. That's what I'm talking about right there. Well, I've been good all week. I deserve a little self-love. How many, right? That's the laughter of recognition. I know that. That is the laughter of recognition right there. Right, so it's not any of those things. It's not buying yourself the extra, you know, pair of shoes or the new thing. It's not even taking that fancy, sexy vacation. It's not getting the hot stone massage. Yes, all of those things can be part of how you care for yourself. But the problem is, in our culture, we have confused self-love with ego gratification. Right? Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
We have confused self-love with ego gratification. So are you looking just to pick yourself up, bolster yourself because the world's got you so beaten down? That is not self-love. That is a dressed-up form of resignation. Just saying. So when I'm talking about self-love, I am not talking about the small s self, like the ego self. How can I make myself feel better today? That is not what I am talking about. I am talking about your capital S self, your highest self, your God self. And they are two really different things. You are a spiritual being having a human experience, and it's the human experience part that gets things a little bit messy. What are you going to be lived by? So this is leading into the workshop. I could just continue, and we'll be done around 3 o'clock today. But I won't, because some of you might have a couple other things to do. So what self-love means, and this is what we're going to be going into the workshop, how to, if you will, invent and design your life as an expression of capital S self-love, loving myself, bringing my God self to all that I do. But you can't do that until you first recognize that you have a God self, that you are a God self, and that everything else, all of your opinions and stress and worry and like whatever else, what else do you have that you throw on top of your God self? All of that, money and relationships and health and all of that, is just part of what you've created in your human mind, your human experience. And your spiritual self, your God self, is the part of you that just is observing all of that craziness, saying, what are you doing? Do you ever have that? Do you ever look at yourself and be like, what, are you doing that again? Are you saying that again? That ego part of yourself, self-love, really means subjugating that. Subjugating that ego part of yourself so that your God self is living you. You are always being lived by something. You can be lived by that ego. I'm right about this. Let me show you. Let me tell you. Or you're going to be lived by that God self that says, I hear what you're saying. Okay, I got that. Don't agree with it, but that's okay. You being you is okay. I'm still going to be over here being me. And we can both coexist, agree and disagree in love. So there is an essence that you were brought here to bring forth into this world. I think it has a lot to do with love and unconditional faith and acceptance, joy, ease, peace. That is the essence of you. That's your God self. So any moment, at any time, that you are experiencing something other than that, just recognize, oh, there it is, human experience again. There I am. There's that humanity. That gets a little tiring. I don't know if you're anything like me. I got a lot of humanity going on. But at least I know that's what's happening. At least I know that's what's happening. Oh, phew, wow. There, that again. And you can just, see it and let it release it. Oh, right, I'm going to be my God self. Why? Because that's what I was born to be. So we're going to get into kind of the how and all of that, but one thing I'll leave you with, because this is really, really important. One of the ways that you bring forth your God self and your highest and best expression is to really know what you value and then just don't cross that line. Live those values in all that you do. Live that sense of love in all that you do. You are here because you're God-loving people. You are here because you have a commitment to being your God self on earth. So define what that means for you. What it means for you might be different than what it means for me. My spouse is all into organizational change work, and I'm always like, yeah, but if you don't change consciousness of the people, you can't change the organizations. So if she's not doing her thing, I'm not doing my thing. Michelle, you're all about the diversity and bringing that, raising consciousness about that conversation. I'm so glad somebody's doing that. Somebody here's probably about health. Who are my health people out there just being a crusader for health? Only 4 or 5 of you. I'm a little worried about this congregation. All right, there we go. Right? I'm so glad, because it's not my thing. I like being healthy and everything, but it's not what I'm going to teach. So there's this thing, maybe it's just being loving to people everywhere, and that's what you're doing and being. But finding that God Christ's essence within. Defining it, write it down, put it on your phone as the screensaver, and then live that essence every moment of every day to every person, including yourself. Let's take that thought into some meditation, shall we?